So this is what we will learn now. Like in every episode of this program, we will begin with getting familiar with the lyrics of the bhajan, and then we'll move on to the tune, the raga. We'll take every word of this bhajan, dwell on its significance, and finally you will listen to how this bhajan sounds when sung in the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir. So let's get started. Here are the lyrics to begin with.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare, He Yadunandana Krishna Hare, Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare, Radha Ramana Shyama Hare.
So just four lines, let's learn how to sing this bhajan. Brother Srinivasulu along with Brother Anirudh will now give us a demonstration.
This bhajan is being sung in the scale G sharp pancham.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare, Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare, Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare, Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare, He Yadunandana Krishna Hare, He Yadunandana Krishna Hare, He Yadunandana Krishna Hare, Krishna Hare, Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare, Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare, Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare, Vaidehi Priya Rama Radha Ramana Shyama Hare, Radha Ramana Shyama Hare, Radha Ramana Shyama Hare, Radha Ramana Shyama Hare, Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare.
So we have got an idea of how this simple, sweet bhajan flows. Brother Srinivasulu gave us a lovely demonstration. And now let us learn a little more about the swaras of the bhajan. Is there a raga based on which this bhajan is composed? Is there anything that we need to know technically about this bhajan? Anirudh will share his thoughts. So tell us, Anirudh, what you feel about the technical structure of this bhajan.
Saram Vishu.
Saram.
This bhajan is a wonderful short and sweet namavali. Just four line. Yet another beautiful composition from Mohan Rao sir. And if you ask me the technical structure, I think it's what I can say is sweetness is the main element in this bhajan. The whole bhajan is built on the sweet notes, and the lyrics are also exactly fit into that sweet notes. That actually you don't classify into one raga. It's something like you have five notes.
Sarigama gari, sarigama pamagari sa.
In that, this whatever I sang is Sari Shudri Komalga
Mapa Magari Sa.
And when the third line comes, you just change the ga to Shuddha ga.
Ga Mapa Pada Pama Gari Sa.
So that's all the bhajan. If you see technical swara breakup of the bhajan, yes. So very tough to say as to which raga it belongs to, because you have the whole bhajan has exposure of only five notes. And in that, many ragas can come. Like
Sari Ga Ma Pa Da Ma Ga Re Sa.
In this you have Charukeshi. One more raga called Sarasangi. So the raga list goes on. When you see the technically analyze each line as to what flavor it is. So as a whole, I can say that this sweet Namavali is a mixture of just five, six notes, which are both Komal and Shuddh, changing according to the line how it is composed. And maybe when we do the Swaras, we will exactly know as which line has that Komal Ga, Shuddh Ga, and it will help us to sing this composition even in a better way.
So perhaps you will find different lines echoing the similar tune in different bhajans. Possibly you cannot place the entire bhajan in one raga.
Yes, yes.
But you know, you will find one line of the bhajan which is similar to a line in another bhajan. So every line perhaps will have so many similar bhajans.
Yes, when you said similar bhajans, actually one bhajan which is constantly ringing in my mind when we sang this bhajan is
Giridhar Gopal Murali Dhara Hare Govinda Gopal Damodara. Giridhar Gopal Murali Dhara Hare Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare.
Very similar way of composing.
And also He Sesha Shayana Narayana Radhe Radhe Vrindavan Radhe.
In that bhajan also the third line.
Radhe Radhe Madhura Murali Baje.
It's such a beautiful feeling of crying out to Lord. So I think no wonder the composer has repeated this kind of phrase in many bhajans, because it evokes devotion. It evokes that feeling of, will you not look at me? Will you not hear my prayer? So that kind of a feeling is given in that the line when you change the from the ga from komal to shuddh.
Ga ma pa pa da ma ga ri ga sa.
I think it's more belonging to a Charukeshi raga based, where you have this emotion. So, and one more bhajan is
Nanda Kishora Jaya Gopal.
See, all these are sweet Namavalis only. The examples are such four liners where you have very minor deviations with around one note or something, but get the essence of the something like you inspire a singer, or you inspire anybody to get that devotion feeling in him. So I think that's what ideally bhajan should evoke, the feelings of devotion. So these Namavalis perfectly fit into that purpose.
Because the lyrics are simple. When you hear the tune, you feel that I can easily follow.
Yes.
And you follow it effortlessly, and it really aids you to convey your emotion.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. So as you said, let's take every line and do the swaras. Probably it will help us to get a feel of how the notes are very beautifully used in the simple bhajan.
Yes. So let's take the first line.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare Sa 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 ri ni ni sa ri ga ri ga ri ga ri ga sa. Sa 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 ri ni ni sa ri ga ri ga ri ga ri ga sa. He Yadu Nandana Krishna Hare sa ri ga ma ma ga ri sa ni ni sa ri ga ri sa. Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare Gama Papa Papa Pada Pada Mama Garisa. Gama Papa Papa Pada Pada
Here it changes to the minor again from the major, the ga from shuddha to komal.
Sari ga ma ga ma ga re re ga re sa.
Sari ga ma ga ma ga re re ga re sa.
Simple and beautiful. I think some of these bhajans can be easily picked up by Westerners, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Also, you need to have little straight notes in like something like
Shambho Mahadeva.
That's easy for them, yeah. Like Murali Krishna.
Murali Krishna, Shambho Mahadeva. Because you have, in the Western music, you have long standing notes.
Yes.
Whereas in this sudden shift of Komal Ga and the Shuddha Ga, but with the help of the current technology and means the trend, it's very easy to pick up music. So you need a little bit of practice and to get into that finer details of how to give the glide from Shuddha Ga to Komal Ga and small fine details like that. But as a bhajan, you see, it can be easily followed in a plain way also.
Shri Raghunandan Rama Hare.
Means even the intricate curves, if they are not followed also, it's the bhajan is easy to follow because the lyrics are very simple.
So let's do the beat.
Yes, the beat is also simple. 8-beat Aditalam in the Carnatic classical music, Keherva in the Hindustani classical music. Let's have a small demo of the bhajan with the help of Kanjira. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hari.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hari.
He Yadunandana Krishna Hari.
It's a very different experience singing simple bhajans.
Yes.
Because you don't have to think so much about the bhajan only. You just connect to the Lord.
Yes, the technical details of the bhajan doesn't come to your mind before the rendition. Because it's very, as you said, it is simple namavalis, composed in a simple tune.
What I felt is, generally, if a bhajan is a bit intricate, then you have to spend a lot of time learning the bhajan,
yes.
And before bhava can come, as you render that bhajan, it's quite a while because you have to learn it really well.
Yes.
Before
yes.
You can actually get into using the bhajan to express your feeling. But in bhajans like these, probably you sing it for 5 times and then...
Yes, it's a little more easier to get the bhava. Because the whole composition is made such a way that the bhava comes in a very easy way.
Yes.
It evokes the feelings.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Anirudh and Arvind Sai.
Thank you, Bishu.
Thank you, Bishu.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. So we are now done with the technicalities of this bhajan and let's move on now to understand, to dwell, to meditate on what this bhajan could possibly convey. Every bhajan has so many meanings, but let's spend some time meditating on this bhajan. Let's begin with the first line.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare.
Rama, Swami says, Rama is the essence of the Vedas. The story of Rama is an ocean of milk. It is pure, it is potent. In fact, Bhagwan says that it can be asserted that no poem of equal grandeur and beauty has emerged from other languages or from other countries until this very day. This story of Rama has provided inspiration to the poetic imagination of every language and country. It is the greatest treasure inherited by every Indian. In fact, by every person of the world. Swami says the story, the Ramayana, is an intensely human drama where God impersonates as man and gathers around him on the vast world stage the perfect and the imperfect, the human and the subhuman, the beast and the demon, to confer on us by precept and example the boon of supreme wisdom. So Rama was born in the Raghu dynasty. He was son in the Raghu clan, and Bhagwan writes about this sacred birth of Lord Rama in Ramakatha Rasavahini. Swami says Ravana, the Rakshasa king of Lanka, heard of Dasharatha and his fame, and he was so filled with envy that he determined on a sure plan to destroy Dasharatha by any means, fair or foul, and Ravana sought for an excuse to provoke Dasharatha into a fight. One day, he sent word through a messenger that unless tribute was paid to him, he would have to meet Ravana on the battlefield and demonstrate his superior might in war. Of course, this was against the call of international morality, but what morality does a demon respect? So when Dasharatha heard the messenger of Ravana speak thus, he simply laughed. And even while the messenger was looking on, King Dasharatha shot sharply deadly arrows which reached Lanka itself and fastened the gates of that city. And then, addressing the envoys, Dasharatha said, "Well, I have now made fast the doors of your fortress city. Your master cannot open them, however hard he may try. This is the tribute that I pay to your impertinent master." So when the envoys returned and informed Ravana of this, he was shocked. The doors of Lanka indeed were closed, and Ravana made desperate efforts with all his men and might, but nothing could open the gates. But when Ravana was struck with shame, strangely, the arrows returned to Ayodhya and the doors flew open. So this rattled Ravana, and he decided that he must overpower all the rulers of the world. And he thought that he can do this only by winning God's grace. So he went over to the depths of the forest and selected a place where he could do severe ascetic practices. And in fact, his asceticism was so intense that Lord Brahma was compelled to appear before him and grant him the boon that he desired. So Lord Brahma says, "Ask whatever you want. I will give you your heart's desire." And Ravana constantly was having this at the back of his mind. He wanted to somehow avenge the insult he had suffered at the hand of Dasharatha. And so he said, "O Lord, bless me with this gift of grace. Let no child be born from the loins of Dasharatha." Because he thought that the children of Dasharatha might be even mightier than Dasharatha himself. So he wanted to stop the rise of a potential enemy. So Brahma blessed Ravana with this boon and immediately vanished from the scene, lest Ravana might frame another foul request if he continued to be there. So Ravana now emerged from his penance, and he was proud and he was devoid of fear. He was exulting over his prowess and success. Meanwhile, another project entered his head. He thought, "Dasharatha is of marriageable age now, and if I ensure that he does not marry at all, then I will be doubly sure that my safety is in no danger." So looking about with the aid of his Rakshasa skills, he discerned that there was a great likelihood that Dasharatha will wed the daughter of the king of Koshala. So he decided to put an end to that princess. How did he do it? Swami says, "Vinashakale viparita buddhi." When one's destruction is imminent, reason turns crooked. So Ravana entered the Koshala kingdom stealthily in disguise, and he kidnapped the princess, and then he placed this princess in a wooden box and cast it over the waves of the sea. Ravana foolishly could not see the truth that nothing can ever happen without the concurrence of the divine will. But the divine had willed something else. What happened was the box was carried by the waves onto the shore, and where the box landed was a fine garden. And The Prime Minister of Dasharatha, Sumantra, happened to visit that garden on a quiet holiday, and there his eyes fall on this mysterious box. He opens it and he's surprised to see in it a girl. And the girl had a halo of divine splendor. She had very attractive, shining eyes. So Sumantra was overcome with pity. He thought, who could do this to a girl? He asked, how did this happen to you, dear? And the girl replied, I am actually the princess of Kosala kingdom. My name is Kaushalya. I'm not aware how I came inside this box or who placed me in it. I was just playing with my friends in the palace gardens and suddenly something happened to me. Sumantra knew that such a barbarian act could be done only by a Rakshasa. He immediately took her to her father and restored her to the king of Kosala. So the king of Kosala was now so happy that he inquired more about Sumantra. And when he discovered that he was none other than the minister at the court of Dasharatha, who is the emperor of Ayodhya, and also learned that King Dasharatha is still unmarried, he was filled with joy at that discovery and he said, you brought back to me this child of mine, saving her from destruction. So I have resolved to give her in marriage to your master himself. Please inform the king about my offer. And when Sumantra told Dasharatha in detail all that had happened, Dasharatha, in order to confirm his acceptance, sent with the court priest of Kosala, his own court priest, with gifts of auspicious nature. And so soon the date and time were fixed. Dasharatha proceeded to the Kosala capital accompanied by a magnificent array of elephantry, chariotry, cavalry, infantry, and the paean of music which marched with him reached the sky, echoed from the horizon. The marriage of Dasharatha and Kausalya was celebrated with resounding grandeur and splendor. The festival lasted 3 days, and on the fourth day, Dasharatha started back for Ayodhya with his queen and courtiers, as well as minister Sumantra. And as they entered the city, all peoples were shouting, Jai, Jai. Dasharatha resumed his royal duties and ruled the realm with love and care. But as time sped by, the shadow of distress darkened the face of the king. The pang of being childless saddened him. So the king consulted priests and pundits and ministers. And when he knew that their desire confirmed the earnest prayer of Kausalya, he decided to marry another wife, and that is how Sumitra also became a queen of King Dasharatha. Kausalya and Sumitra were bound to each other by ties of affection far stronger than those between a mother and child. Each yearned to give joy to the other. Each had deep fortitude, detachment and sympathy. But in spite of the lapse of many years, no signs of the king securing a successor to the throne were evident. Moved by despair, the king now decided to marry a third wife, and this was at the instance of the former two queens, and this was to be Kaika, the charming daughter of the king, or the Kekeya in Kashmir. The king of Kashmir, however, laid down certain conditions. He insisted that the son born of Kaika should have the right of ascension to the throne. And now the king was in a dilemma. But Kausalya and Sumitra recognized the pain of the king, and they also knew fully well that the imperial line of Ayodhya can never be polluted by a son who transgressed dharma. So though Dasharatha promised that the son of the third wife could succeed to the throne, the other queens were certain that the son born of Kaika would be an embodiment of righteousness. He would be free from such blemish. So they pleaded with the king to not think about this anymore and go ahead and bring the princess of Kaikeya to Ayodhya. So that is how the third marriage also happened. Dasharatha returned to the capital, shining like the moon amidst the stars, when he passed through the streets in procession accompanied by the three queens, and the king treated each of them with equal consideration. They too evinced equal love and respect towards each other and the king. There was such intimate mutual love that it appeared as if all the three had but one breath, though they moved about as three bodies. Years passed, the kings and the queens crossed the bounds of youth and middle age, and they were almost now reaching
old age, but there were no signs of his son. And it is at this hour of deep unrest, anxiety and despair that one day they thought of consulting their family preceptor Vasishtha and accept his advice. So at the break of dawn the next day, Vasishtha was respectfully invited for consultation. Listening to the king's prayer, Vasishtha dwelt long in thought. He was in meditation. After deep contemplation, he opened his eyes and then said, "O king, you need not grieve anymore. Ayodhya will not be rendered masterless. Ayodhya will not suffer widowhood. This domain will be happy and prosperous in unbroken festivity and evergreen with festoonery. She will be the guardian of right living, reverberating with music and joy. I will not agree to the raising of a prince from some other dynasty to the throne of Ayodhya. The grace of God is a gift inscrutable. The vow of righteousness which you are fulfilling will surely bring you the supreme joy of having a son. Do not delay any further. Invite the sage Rishyashringa, the son of Vibhandaka, and perform with him as the high priest the sacred yaga called Putra Kameshti Yaga, the yaga prescribed for those desirous of begetting a son. Make all the necessary ceremonial and ritual arrangements for the yaga forthwith. Your desire will be achieved without fail." Everyone was ecstatic listening to the reassuring words of sage Vasishtha. A new bud of hope bloomed anew in their hearts, and the king searched among his entourage for the most appropriate emissary to be sent to Rishyashringa, the son of Vibhandaka, and to invite him to the imperial capital on such a sacred mission. At last, he called his old friend Romapada, the king of the Anga state, and sent him with necessary instructions and equipments. Meanwhile, arrangements for the yaga were put through on the bank of sacred Sarayu River. And as was anticipated, the great sage Rishyashringa entered the city of Ayodhya to the great delight of all with his consort Shanta. Emperor Dasharatha welcomed the sage at the main gate of the palace. The sage described the various processes for the ceremony so that the court priest could note them down for their guidance. And then the sage decided that the yaga shall begin on the stroke of 7 the very next day. The river bank was thick with eager people of Ayodhya waiting for this most awaited sacrifice which would bring joy to the entire kingdom. Rishyashringa with his consort Shanta entered the specially built Yaga Mandapam with the king and the queens, while Vedic chanting and the music of bugle, trumpet, clarinet and the cheers of people resounded from the sky. Rishyashringa was installed as the Brahma or the chief organizer for the Yaga. And he assigned various tasks like worship, recitation, chanting, propitiation to different scholars in consideration of their qualifications. The offerings were placed in the sacred fire with the prescribed formulae by Rishyashringa himself with scrupulous exactitude, with deep devotion and faith. And as the yaga was going on, from the fire which was scripturally fed, there arose before all eyes a divine person who shone with the blinding splendor of a sudden stroke of lightning, and he held a bright vessel in his hands. The vast concourse of people there were petrified when they saw this. This was something absolutely phenomenal. They were seeing with wonder, with awe, with fear, with joy. They didn't know how to react. They were overwhelmed by that sudden onrush of mystery and bliss. The king and the queens were shedding tears of joy seeing this divine being, and they prayed with folded hand to him to guide them and explain to them this mystifying encounter. And suddenly a voice resounded from the dome of the sky. Rishyashringa sat aghast and sought to listen to the message from above. And the message said, "Maharaja, accept this vessel, give this sacred payasam, this sacred prasadam, in appropriate shares to your three queens." Saying thus, the vessel was placed in the hands of the king, and the mysterious person who had emerged from the flames disappeared back into the flames. The joy of the people, the pundits, the priests knew no bounds. Finally, the rituals were completed and Maharaja was in deep ecstasy and peace. He was so happy that finally the gods had listened to his prayer, and that is how from that prasadam was born Lord Vishnu as Sri Rama, and that is how Vishnu became Raghunandana. The last word in this line is Hare, which is a variation of Hari, which is an often used name for Lord Vishnu. Bhagwan explains that Hari means remover or destroyer, since he destroys hurdles on the path of human beings to sadhana. And here, Hari was incarnating as Rama to destroy the forces of evil, to destroy Ravana and his band of demons. So in this line, we sing to the Lord, who out of his immense compassion incarnated as Sri Rama to protect the world and to safeguard his devotees. Let's move on to the next line.
He Yadunandana Krishna Hare.
Now let's reflect on Krishna's birth. Yadunandana, Krishna was born in the Yadu or the Yadava clan. Swami says whenever cruelty and unrighteousness reach intolerable proportions, God incarnates on earth and destroys wrongdoers. God himself steps into the world, but why does he himself do it? Couldn't he send his deputies to complete the task? Swami says, if two people are quarreling on the road, a constable is enough to separate them. But if it is a crowd that is going mad, you need the sub-inspector of police to manage the situation. But if it is a major riot, then the inspector general himself has to come into the scene to control the situation. The world at that point in time was in such pitiable situation because of the rule of Kamsa. Everyone felt they were in the midst of a fire because of Kamsa's cruelties. And God decided to incarnate to destroy the selfish Kamsa and at the same time to come to the rescue of his devotees. So at the opportune time in the Dwapara Yuga, God summoned Maya Shakti. Devaki had conceived her seventh child. Vasudeva had a wife, Rohini, prior to Devaki. She was at Nanda's place temporarily for fear of Kamsa. The Lord instructed Maya to transfer Devaki's seventh child into the womb of Rohini, and Maya herself entered into the womb of Yashoda, the wife of Nanda. So this seventh child, who was none other than the incarnation of Adishesha, was named Balarama. That is why Swami says Balarama is also called Sankarshana, meaning one who was transferred. She was transferred from Devaki to Rohini. And then the Lord told Maya, I will myself enter Devaki's womb as her eighth child. And that is how the divine effulgence manifested in the womb of Devaki. Devaki and Vasudeva bowed to the child when he came onto the earth, but they didn't know. In fact, in the previous night itself, the Lord appeared to them in a dream and said, I am going to take birth from your womb tomorrow at dawn. So they knew that God was coming to the world through them. Yet, they were very afraid of the Lord's safety because they were all the time terrified of the evil designs of Kamsa. And Swami says, this is the Maya, this is the delusion. If the baby was God, does the protection of God lie in the hands of mere mortals? They were God's parents, yet they were full of fear. Swami says, this is how the game of Maya goes on in people's minds. We have faith and suddenly we lose faith. We say, Swami, you are everything, and then the next moment we hold on to everything. So Devaki and Vasudeva, they were in jail. Their hands and feet were shackled with chains and they didn't know how to escape from there, how to protect the Lord. And suddenly the doors of the jail just flung open. And Vasudeva placed the Lord in a small basket and wondered how to fulfill the Lord's command of taking him out of the prison. And instantly, The gates of the prison door opened, all their chains broke loose. No one was around. The guards went into slumber and Vasudeva quietly walked out of the dungeon. And as he proceeded, there was a tremendous downpour of rain, which is, Swami says, a sign of intense joy and purity of the occasion. Even the clouds were ecstatic at the divine advent nature was celebrating. And balancing the basket on his head, Vasudeva walked in the direction of Gokula. But river Yamuna flowed across his path. But when God himself walks, who can obstruct him? Adishesha came there. The river parted for them to proceed. And Swami says at that moment, Maya was born to Yashoda. Everyone was asleep at Gokul, Vrindavan too. So Vasudeva switched the babies and returned. And it was all done so seamlessly as per the inscrutable plan of the Lord. Swami says, it is so difficult to believe the way the babies were switched and everything happened so mysteriously. Nobody can understand God's plans. No one can change God's plans. No one can ever come in the way of the divine will of protection of the good and annihilation of the wicked. It is beyond science. It is beyond our limited minds. The sports of God are beyond all comprehension of all the minds of all the people in the world put together. So to this inscrutable, infinite, indomitable Lord, who out of his love for us took this beautiful form of Lord Krishna, we sing in praise, we sing in joy this line, He Yadunandana Krishna Hari. Let's move on to the third line.
Vaidehi Priya Rama Hare.
Vaidehi is another name of Mother Sita. Sita is always understood as the consort of Lord Rama. But Swami says, who is Rama? Swami says, Atma is Rama. The inner significance of the Rama story is so beautiful. Swami says, Rama is the source of bliss in every individual, which is the Atma. His blessings are upsurging from the inner spring of our hearts, and that is what can confer on us peace and bliss. The Ramayana or the Rama story, Bhagwan says, teaches two lessons, the value of detachment and the need to become aware of the divine in every being. Faith in God and detachment from objective pursuits. These are the keys for human liberation, and Ramayana is an elaboration of this principle. Give up sense objects, you gain Rama. Sita gave up the luxuries of Ayodhya and decided to go with Rama into the forest, and that is how she could be with Rama in the period of exile. But when she cast longing eyes on the golden deer and craved for it, she lost the presence of Rama. Swami says, renunciation leads to joy. Attachment brings grief. We have to be in the world, but not of it. We have to practice love in the world, but not love the world. If you are always attached to God, there would actually be no troubles. For every depression, the seed is desire, isn't it? We can reduce our tensions once we reduce our intentions to possess. Instead, if we fill it with intentions of prayer, intentions of devotion, we will always be in the sea of illumination, in the illumination of bliss and benediction. So that is what is conveyed in this line, Vaidehi Priya Rama Hari. We should attach ourselves to Rama alone, just like Mother Sita taught us in this great epic. Let's move on to the next line.
Radha Ramana Shyama Hare.
Radha again is one of the greatest examples of how we should be solely attached to the Lord. It is difficult to get detached from the world, given that we have this body and given that we have so many responsibilities, duties and practical issues. Swami says, yes, it might be difficult to get detached from the world, but what is far easier is to get attached to God. And if we get attached to God, slowly we will automatically be detached from the world. It will happen seamlessly. We need a minimum level of attachment because we have this body, and so we have to maintain that balance. And that is what we learn from the lives of Radha, from Meera. When the final moment came, Radha completely merged in the Lord, just like we see in the case of Meera. She completely went into the shrine of Lord Krishna. And it is for this reason, Swami says, that their devotion superseded everything else. Their love for the Lord superseded even the Lord's love for them. And that is how they come before the Lord's name. It's Radha Krishna. It is Sita Rama. Parvati Parameshwara. That is the power of deep attachment, intense love for the Lord. Shama means the blue complexion one. Again, it means the one who is absolutely mysterious, like the mysterious oceans and the mysterious sky. So plenty of beautiful lessons if you go on meditating on this simple, sweet four-line bhajan. Dear listeners, let's just take even one word of this bhajan and let that continuously ring in our minds, in our hearts, and every cell of our being, and we will slowly become one with that name. And once you become one with that name, you will become that form. Anyone who talks to us will feel God's love coming out of us. That is what bhajans should do to us. Let's pray to the Lord to fill us with that kind of intensity and purity. Let's sing this bhajan once again.
Sri Raghunandana Rama Hare.
So with that, we come to the end of this episode of Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom. We hope you enjoyed this offering. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org, or we look forward to your messages on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with us through this program. And yes, do stay connected to us through Radio Sai. Our website is radiosai.org. We offer this humble effort at His lotus feet with all humility and love.